real quick what the gravitino is and give a small introduction. I will talk about how gravitinos can be produced in thermal scatterings in the early universe. This will immediately lead to an upper bound on the reheating temperature. And then I will also talk about gravitino production from decays and resulting constraints on BBN, and especially on catalyzed BBN. And then I will say something about how to avoid constraints with late-time entropy production. Okay, so as a small motivation, I would like to draw an analogy between QED and local supersymmetry, just to explain what the gravitino really is. So suppose you write down the free kinetic term for a fermion. It will exhibit a global U1 symmetry. And once you gauge this symmetry, so once you make the gauge parameter dependent on x, the action will no longer be invariant, and you will have a term which couples the derivative of the gauge parameter to the Noether current of the theory. In this case, the Noether current is just psi bar gamma mu psi. And in order to fix that, one introduces the photon field, which transforms in an appropriate way under this gauge transformation, so that the global action, once you couple, so that the total action, once you couple the photon field to the Noether current, will again be invariant under local U1 transformations. Okay, so now given the tremendous success of the gauge principle, it's only natural to ask, can one also do the same thing in supersymmetry? So given a globally invariant supersymmetric action, you can make the parameter which characterizes the SUSY transformation dependent on x. And then again, the action will not be invariant. And you will have a term which depends on the derivative times this epsilon r. Now this r is a spinner index, because the gauge parameter is a spinner. And so you have here, in fact, a spin 3/2 object. And J mu is now the supercurrent, and the Noether current of the supersymmetry, which is the supercurrent. And in the same manner as in QED, you introduce the gravitino. And you have to put an M Planck here in the denominator, because the supercurrent has dimension 7/2. And well, this is a spinner here, so it has dimension 3/2. And in order to make it a dimension 4 operator, you need a mass scale to suppress it, and naturally this is a mass scale to get a dimension 4 operator, and this is the Planck scale. Okay, so to summarize, the gravitino is the gauge field of local supersymmetry transformations, so it's really at the heart of supergravity, and it's a superbarton of the graviton, a spin 3/2 field, and after SUSY is broken, the gravitino will acquire a mass, and the mass is in fact intrinsically connected to the underlying braking mechanism. And since we are not aware of this mechanism, we treat the mass really as a free parameter, and it can range from anything. And yeah, as I said already, it's very important that the couplings of the gravitino are completely fixed by the symmetry, and they are suppressed by inverse powers of the Planck mass. Except for very light gravitinos, where I can have an enhancement due to the Golcino components. That's the super Higgs mechanism working behind. Okay, so it's clear that for gravitino processes to become important, one needs an environment where the typical energies are very high. And such an environment is given in the early universe. After the inflaton field decays and the universe reheats up to a certain reheating temperature and enters the radiation-dominated epoch. Then gravitinos can be produced in scatterings of particles which are in thermal equilibrium with a primordial plasma. For instance, you can have two gluons coming in and a gravitino gluino coming out. So whenever you have very high reheating temperatures, these processes are very important and contribute for the gravitino production. Now it turns out that in order to do this calculation, you need some you need some treatment from thermal field theory. This is because whenever you have here a massless gauge boson propagating a T on a U channel, you will encounter a logarithmic singularity once the momentum transfer goes to zero. And this is actually regularized by screening effects of the plasma. So one can do this calculation in a gauge invariant way using so-called hard thermal loop or some propagators. And whenever the momentum transfer is low, you substitute with such a propagator. And you, in fact, split the calculation in two parts. So you have two scales. So first of all, I should say this mechanism only works in the Weeks coupling limit, so that you can separate a weak scale G times T from a hard scale T. Now T is the temperature and thereby the typical energy of those particles coming in. So the hard part you can just do by conventional Feynman diagrams, while the soft part you calculate the, in this case you can do it via the Goldstein self energy, and then you get two contributions which are of this form. And here this Q star, the intermediate cutoff, will in fact in the end cancel out and give you the collision term for the Boltzmann equation. So this gravitino production has a long history of calculation, and using this hard thermal loop resound propagators, it was first done by these authors for SUSY QCD, and we have extended this calculation to the electroweak sector. Okay, and then at the end of the day, you end up with this collision term. And now if you change here to temperature, you can integrate this, the Boltzmann equation actually analytically, because you have a T squared from the Hubble rate, one T comes over, and then the entropy, if you normalize your number density to the entropy, you get another T to the third. So this T to the sixth will in the end cancel out, and you can integrate that with approximation analytically. And this is what you get. You get the gravitino yield. Now this is the number density normalized to the entropy density. It's just this expression. What is important to note is that the gravitino yield from thermal production is basically linear in the reheating temperature. There is some logarithm, which is a remnant of this finite temperature calculation, and here it exhibits this fact I'll explain in a minute. Okay, so assuming that the gravitino is the lightest SUSY particle and R parity is conserved, the gravitino is stable and it can be accounted for dark matter. So then you will immediately run into an upper bound on the reheating temperature because of this dependence on TR. And comparing with the observationally inferred dark matter abundance, what you need to have to do is, so this MI here are the Gugino masses. And once you specify them, for instance, in a scenario where they unify at the gut scale, you can choose your M1/2, and then you can calculate the abundance of gravitinos here. Now this one here accounts to the spin 3/2 production of gravitinos, while this second part here is the Goldstein production or the spin 1/2 production. So whenever you have a very light gravitino, you will have an enhancement here. Okay, and this is here an upper bound on the reheating temperature for different values of the universal Gugino mass parameter. And you see, for instance, for 100 GeV gravitino, you can accomplish a reheating temperature of 10 to the 9 GeV, for example. Well, this is because, so this turnover here for very high gravitino masses, the spin 3/2 component becomes more important, and omega here goes with m gravitino times y. And so you multiply this one here with the m gravitino. So. And here, yeah, for small values, you catch up this. Okay. So now gravitinos are also produced from the NLSB, from the next lightest SUSY particle when they decay. And it's actually very simple. So the abundance of the non-thermally produced ones is just this ratio of the gravitino mass over the NLSB mass times times the yield the analysis fees would have had they not decayed. Okay, and in order to do this a bit more systematically, I've chosen the constraint MSSM, which are characterized by these five parameters, so the universal gate genome mass, the universal scalar mass, trilinear scalar interaction, tangent speed, and sine of mu. So, yeah, so we here plotted M1/2 versus M0. Now, this dashed line here is now the dividing line between a neutralino NLSB and here, and the lower half, the tau is the NLSB. These blue lines here are contours of constant tau mass. So, for instance, here for M1/2, 700 GeV, we have a 250 GeV tau. And these black lines here are contours of constant Y NLSB, which are in the range of 10 to the minus 14 to 10 to the minus 12, normalized to the entropy density. Okay, so now we can again look at constraints on the reheating temperature in this framework. And apart from the five parameters of the MSSM, now I will have two more parameters in the game, namely the gravitational mass and the reheating temperature. And we can infer the parameter regions where this relation is fulfilled, so where the gravitinos are really dark matter. And then, so for example, fixing M gravitino to 100 GeV, we get these green bands for different values of the reheating temperature. So for example, if we have 10 to the 9 GeV, the gravitino constitute the dark matter here in this band, and if you go to higher, to lower reheating temperatures, then the thermal production of the gravitinos will be less important. And so we increase the value of M1/2, which increases the value of the gate genome masses, and thereby we account, we again get the right abundance. Now here, this bending of the bands is due to the non-thermal production, because in the neutralino NLSB region, the yield is higher. And so here, as soon as we get closer to the coannihilation region, these bands curve. Here's another example for M gravitino equals M0. So now the non-thermal production becomes important more early, and this curves, these bands bend earlier. This is because if we increase M0, we increase also the gravitino mass and thereby the non-thermal production. And here, these dashed lines are contours of constant NLSB lifetime. So here, for example, we have 10 to the 7 seconds. Here, the tau leaves 10 to the 5 seconds, and here, 1,000 seconds. Okay. Yeah, so Big Bang nuclear synthesis, or the abundances of the light elements, are, of course, heavily influenced by extra neutrino species, or, for example, by non-thermal nuclear reactions. And this also happens in the tau gravitino scenario, because the NLSB will decay and produce electromagnetic and hadronic energy release and change the abundances of the light elements. And this class of scenarios has actually extensively been studied, and the list, of course, is very incomplete. I will only show a couple of constraints, and I will later on concentrate only on the lithium constraint, because we are really interested in the reheating temperature in these scenarios. So, yeah, this is the lifetime of the NLSB, which goes like the gravitino mass squared over the M star mass to the fifth, which explains the large lifetimes, because we also have here M Planck squared. And the hadronic energy release in the star scenario is produced by four body decays, which with the QQ bar final states here. And the branching ratio in these scenarios is rather low, the hadronic branching ratio. Okay, so we can put in some constraints. Now here, for example, for intermediate lifetimes of start like with 1,000 seconds to or longer lifetimes, this deuterium constraint is very important. That's a constraint from the hadronic energy injection because it will hit it, a helium and thereby easily produce a lot of deuterium. And here are two curves. Now this is all excluded within these curves, depending on the adopted value for the deuterium abundance. Here's also another constraint for for longer lifetimes. The electromagnetic constraint on helium-3 over deuterium becomes important and also excludes a substantial fraction of the parameter space. Okay, and here's another scenario where we hold the gravitino mass fixed to 100 GeV, and we encounter, yeah, the picture looks different, but the features are the same. So okay, there's, as you well know, there's a new effect from catalyzed BBN. So whenever you have this bound state of a helium-4 with an X, lithium-6 can very efficiently be fused. And well, before you jump on me, I will say that we do here a very simple treatment of the catalyzed BBN reaction. We only take the now the rate from Kamimura et al. And use a recombination rate which goes directly to the 1S state. But as I will argue later, I will show a comparison plot. This is actually a good approximation for our purposes. Okay, so depending on the tau yield, we will get now contours of lithium-6 produced in CBBN, and we see that for longer lifetimes, we will be in vast excess with the observed primordial abundance. Okay, so we can contrast this, for example, here with the primordial lithium abundance of 2 × 10⁻¹⁻ and infer an upper bound on yx from these contour lines. Or turn it around, get an upper bound on the lifetime. And this is shown here. Now, the red line here is the lithium constraint, and everything to the left of this line is now excluded by lithium-6 overproduction. Notice that the green bands here, that this corresponds to a reheating temperature of 10 to the 7 GeV. So a reheating temperature of 10 to the 8 GeV is excluded in this class of scenarios. And also, the same happens for constant gravitino mass. And also, if we vary the values of tension theta, we will always find the same picture, that reheating temperatures above 10 to the 7 GeV are excluded. So this is, in fact, a strong constraint for models of inflation, and also disfavors thermoelectrogenesis, which needs rather high reheating temperatures of 10 to the 9 GeV. Okay, we can look into this again and try to do it in a little bit more analytic way, or derive a semi-analytic expression for this lithium constraint. So given a typical NLSB abundance, the lifetime is constrained, and this will imply a lower limit on the mass leaking between the gravitino and the star. And so in order to relate then the star mass to M1/2, we scanned over a big range of parameter space and got out that M star squared is never bigger than 0.21 M1/2 squared. Now this is actually easily understood because, for instance, for a right handed star, one can write down this expression how the star mass is related to M1/2 and M0. And this factor here is just because of the renormalization group running, where you have the gauge genus in the loop, and you can pull out this M1/2, and then it's just an integral over the gauge couplings here. And also because the neutralino mass is usually something 0.2 times M1/2 squared in the CMSSM here, rather independent of tangens beta. And so this is why this constraint holds in the tau NLSB region. So now, using the supergravity prediction of the lifetime, you can infer this bound here on M1/2, which depends on the gravitino mass. And plugging this in into the thermal production of gravitinos, we get also a bound on the reheating temperature, roughly 5 × 10⁷ GeV times M gravitino, and there's a power of 1/5. Now this power here so this value here will change only very slowly by varying the gravitational mass from 10 to 1000 GeV, for example. This will always stay in the same order of magnitude. And note that since in the star NLSB region, M1/2 is very small, the SUSY mass spectrum really scales with M1/2 and thereby implies a very heavy SUSY spectrum. And this is illustrated here, where I've plotted the mGluino 2.5 TeV contour line. And you see in this scenario, it's excluded, and so on the edge of the collider reach. Also, there's quarks here, and the stop here is like 0.7 times mGluino in this plane here. So also very heavy. Now, just a small comparison here. Here I took the data from the recent paper of Carlson, because we have a very simple CBBN treatment, and in Carlson's treatment, there's of course the lithium-6 production from the X-minus decays and everything included. So now here, for the small branching ratios we have, we see that the catalytic effect on lithium-6 is really the dominant one, and this justifies our treatment. And also, if we would adopt for different values of lithium-6, like 4 × 10⁻¹⁰, or for a very large value of lithium-6, you see that these numbers change marginally. And so for our purposes, this is really fine. Okay. So how can one circumvent this strong constraint? And one way is to do it by producing entropy and thereby diluting the Stau NLSB yield and reducing the effect of the catalytic enhancement of lithium-6. Note that you will also not only dilute the Stau yield, but also the thermally produced gravitino yield. And you also have to do it in a very short time window between NLSB decoupling and before the onset of BBN. So you're very constrained. So the lowest reheating or the lowest second reheating temperature what you can have is order of some MeV, so 2, 3, 4 MeV. And also you shouldn't make your field which will decay and produce entropy. You shouldn't make it to dominate the energy density of the universe too early, otherwise you enhance the Hubble rate and you will have a higher NLSB yield, and again you run into the same constraint. Yeah, so if you produce, let's say, a delta, here delta is now this ratio of the entropies before and after of 100, you will see that the lithium-6 bounce hardly moves because the constraint is so strong. However, since you dilute the thermal production, the green bands for a fixed reheating temperature will now move, and now a reheating temperature of 10⁹ GeV will be possible again.
Dilution by some scalar field or something?
Yeah, I don't think that this is a very natural scenario. In fact, if you have a scalar field, it will be very difficult to accomplish. This is because you should make sure that, first of all, the scalar field decays in this narrow time window, and then it should not have a big branching ratio into the stars,
right?
Because otherwise you produce them again.
It's very, very strange in that style. I think branching ratio should be very, very small.
How massive your inflator should be?
Yeah, so that's the point. You should actually make it lighter than the star.
Yeah.
But then it should couple more strongly than gravitationally, otherwise it wouldn't decay at that time.
Sure. So
you need like a very constrained spectrum.
But how heavy? Just give me an idea.
Yeah, another question is that during the decay of that such a particle, there is a subdominant component of the radiation. Do you know what?
So yes, there's
is that included? Yeah, maybe that's one.
Yeah, here actually, it was studied here that if you produce this radiation, it has to thermalize again, so that you get the right number of effective degrees of freedom. And especially, this is important for the neutrinos.
Yeah, but in that case, we assume that the fact that here apart will completely go.
Yes. I mean, here it's the same, right? So here you have the radiation, and here's the scalar particle, which really dominates the energy density of the universe, and then it decays.
Oh, okay.
And it has decay well before BBM here.
In that case, the delta is much larger.
Sorry?
Okay. In that case, delta is 10,000?
No, yeah, here it's 10 to the, well, it depends. So here it's 10 to the 4, and here it's 100. Depending on the reheating temperature afterwards, and how much we allow it to dominate at some point in the history, right?
Yeah, I was thinking about it's a little high temperature before the reheating, you know, during the decay of the scalar particle is a radiation with a higher temperature than the reheating temperature. Yeah. Some maximum temperature is high enough, dilute plasma.
Yes.
But you already included the temperature, I suppose. And that radiation could also produce the star if it's a little bit higher than the
That's a very good point. Well, what we took into account in these plots is due to the presence of the phi field that it's not true because the reheating temperature does never increase. So when you produce entropy, it will actually it's right here. So if you produce entropy, it won't increase again in the reheating temperature. It will only drop less faster, right?
Yeah.
Only in the sub-decay approximation you would have a jump in the reheating temperature, but actually it doesn't happen.
But you follow the star production all the way.
Yes. So
during production also it's diluted, it's not produced.
Yes. So what we do, we take into account the effect of the increased Hubble rate.
Mm-hmm.
So we have modified the micromegascope in order to.
But that is only for the cases in very large values.
Yeah.
Only
yeah.
for delta 10 to the 4.
Yeah.
For the smaller values, that was not necessary. But this delta 10 to the 4 is really at the very edge. Then you already have this modification.
10 to the 4 is actually necessary to avoid the leaching six.
Yes. Actually, here it is. I mean. Well, then it really depends, you know, because it depends how the lithium 6 constraint for the low star yields.
That's right.
Really, how it goes. So it's very model dependent, and I don't say it has to be delta 2 times. It's 2 times 10 to the minus 12 because this 2, in fact, comes from the increased freeze out value of the stars. So it's just in all. Proof of principle plot here, but it's not a precision study or anything. Should just illustrate that you can elude BBM constraints by entropy production. And it's in fact possible in this narrow time window. But from the model building point of view, probably not so easy to fine tune it. Okay, let me conclude. I've discussed an upper limit on the reheating temperature of thermal radiation production, so I have talked a little bit how this production process works. I have shown that this can yield a strong constraint on the reheating temperature from the effect of lithium 6 within the CMSSM, which is a strong bound on inflation models and for thermal apogenesis or in general for pyrogenesis scenarios, which need high reheating temperatures. So, and depending on the gravitino mass, this can be associated with a difficult mass region to probe at LHC. And latent entropy production, well, can allow for high reheating temperatures, but it's contrived because, and you also need to produce the right baryon density, which I forgot to mention, which is also diluted, right? Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? If we can move to our next talk.